Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Matt Bubala in for Dean Richards this morning. Hey, everybody. It's Matt Bubala filling in for Dean Richards here on a Sunday morning. It's great to be with you with this fiery orb over my back coming up over Lake Michigan. It's been a while since I've done that. So thank you very much for being along with us. Thanks for having me here. We're here this morning because Dino's taking the day off because he's been very public about this. So I'm not hesitant to share that his mom passed away earlier this week. Dean posted on his Facebook page earlier this week, "My mom, Angeline, died at Evanston Hospital after a long battle with dementia and heart issues. She worked hard all of her life caring for her four sons, at the same time working full-time and always in the kitchen, cooking and baking, which was her passion. She loved her family, especially her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A lifelong Chicagoan, she always loved WGN, even if entertainment reports that she didn't understand were on. In recent years, she visited the TV WGN Morning News several times and was a WGN Radio fan favorite when she'd come on my show to share recipes or personal appearances, even bringing homemade Greek yogurt for the audience once. She was 97 years old." It's been a week of a lot of loss, I guess, around here. We think about Dino losing his mom and Ruth Bader Ginsburg passing away. So I hope as you start out your Sunday morning, you take a moment to think about Dino. He'll be back here next week, and I'm sure he will share much more of his thoughts and memories of his wonderful mom. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to have Dean's normal show today leading into playoff-bound White Sox baseball at 11:30 a.m. Joe Brand is here in the sports department. Dave Schwann is in the newsroom. We'll have Schwanee's far-flung forecast coming up shortly here on the morning show. 312-981-7200, of course, is the phone number. You're welcome to jump in at any point. Ryan's behind the glass. He'll answer and put you through to us, and we'll get a chance to talk. Of course, Schwanee's coming up with a forecast. We've got Dr. Kevin Most on the phone after the 9:30 a.m. news to get you the latest on what we need to know and what the news is this week on the latest of everything we're dealing with in the world. At 10 o'clock, Paul Nolte from Kingsview Wealth Management. You've probably heard him on the midday business report, the business lunch that we do here at noon every day. He's been on there many times, and he'll have some advice for us on what we should be thinking about right now as we head into the winter months and the economy seems to sound great, sound awful, jobless numbers are up, they're down. What should we be thinking about and what should we be doing with our numbers and with our finances and where are things headed? We'll talk to Paul about that and get you some advice there. And of course, we will take some time today to remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's the way we do it. 9:16 in the morning here on 720 WGN. Again, I'm Matt Bubala filling in for Dean Richards this weekend. Dean will be back next weekend. Dave Schwann is in the newsroom. Joe Brand's in the sports department. We might be a minute or two early, but I think it's time for Dave Schwann's far-flung forecast. What's going on, Schwanee?
Well, you threw me there for a minute, but now that I heard the opening music bed, I know where I'm.
You know where you're at now?
Yeah, right. I'm back home. Today, our far-flung forecast takes us out east to New York State, to Ithaca, New York. Ithaca, New York, which is northwest of New York City, has been a settlement since the late 1600s, the 1700s there. Population of 30,837 as of the 2010 census. We may in the next year or so have an update on that figure with the 2020 census underway right now. But Ithaca, New York is also home to a very famous, prestigious university, Cornell University, which was founded in 1865, co-founded by Andrew Dixon White and a man named Ezra Cornell, who incidentally was also the founder of Western Union. And we bring up Ithaca, New York, and Cornell University because that is where one Ruth Bader Ginsburg did her undergraduate work before going to Harvard Law School. She also met her husband there, at Cornell University. So as you mentioned, Matt, we are talking, of course, about Ruth Bader Ginsburg throughout the weekend here and into the week, not only news-wise, but on the program here today. Certainly appropriate to mention Cornell University and Ruth Bader Ginsburg doing undergraduate work there before going on to really doing great things in the country. Ithaca, New York has a partly cloudy day. They are 48. They're 48 degrees there.
Ooh, it's a little chilly there this
morning. Chillier there. They were
supposed
down
to,
into the...
Supposed to warm up there? Are they having a tough day?
Yeah, only 62 for a high today.
Well,
and overnight low in the 30s for overnight low tonight.
Okay, that's chilling out. All right, so a couple quick questions, Dave. Now, my geography is not the best. I'll admit that right now.
Yeah.
But isn't just about everything in New York northwest of New York City?
Well, some of it's due north of New York.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
But
fair enough.
You're actually right. You're actually right. Where the
86% of the state is roughly northwest of New York City.
The city itself is situated so far southeast, you know, adjacent to Long Island and next to New Jersey, that yes, everything is north northwest of New York City. You're right.
All right, thank you. Now, I want to ask a question about Cornell University because I didn't know its illustrious. Well, of course, it's an illustrious school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever watched The Office, but my kids have watched The Office ad nauseum. And one of the characters, Andy Bernard, went to Cornell, and he loves to say, "Cornell, maybe you've heard of it," and you know, make a big deal out of it. And so you're telling me that Cornell was founded by two gentlemen, one whose name was Cornell.
Yes, Ezra Cornell and Andrew Dixon White.
And what do you think happened there? That they're like, listen, Dixon White, it just doesn't flow. It doesn't make sense. Let's go with Cornell. Or was he throwing in a bunch of cash? Like, how do you think those conversations went down when they named the university?
That's a good question. I'm not real sure. But
because poor Andrew Dixon White just lost the history. Nobody knows who that is.
Exactly. He was an educator and historian and co-founder of the university. Also, his first president. There, but yeah,
maybe that was the exchange.
I think it might have been the exchange.
You get your name, I'm president.
You get the name and also money. You know, if Ezra Cornell founded Western Union, which was already quite successful by 1865, he had some money.
Yeah, my Western Union stock has gone down quite a bit in the last 100 years, though, unfortunately.
Ask some younger folks what Western Union is these days.
You know what? I gotta tell you,
you don't know.
It's Joe Brand's gonna agree with me on this too. The Office might be the newest TV show that has been mentioned on this show.
Are you taking a shot at Schwani or Dean? Or what are you doing here, Ryan?
Right.
I know Dean's not here, but it's not like he's like going to shoot
and arrows there.
I think the closest second was maybe Seinfeld a few weeks ago. So, yeah, I think you're right, Ryan.
So a show that's been off the air for about 10 years is the most recent new show that's been mentioned on this.
1 point for the young members of the broadcast
crew. We're slowly but surely taking over.
Well,
The Office, that's down the hall. I mean, there are offices...
Yeah, this is a TV show called The Office.
I know.
Oh, okay.
Just kidding.
Schwani, off the air, you and I were chatting a little bit this morning, and we never realized, all the years we've known each other, that we both grew up in Northwest Indiana.
I know. Adjacent towns. Highland for me, Munster for you.
Yeah.
And my dad lived in Munster for a little while. Mom and dad lived in Munster for a while.
Highland and Munster, when I was growing up, it was a big rivalry between Munster High School and Highland. Well, I have no idea. I mean, this is 30 years ago when I left town.
Well, 45 years ago, it certainly was.
I remember they would have, I think... And I didn't go to Munster High School. I ended up going to Mount Carmel.
Okay.
But as I remember when my sister and brother were at Munster High School, my sister was the band major. She like led the band.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was a big rival, like the homecoming game each year. I think they would be Munster and Highland, or probably alternating because you wouldn't play each other's place each year. That would switch off. But there was something about they would paint the bridge. Whoever won that game would then go paint the bridge, either, I believe, blue and yellow for Highland.
That's right.
Or red and white for Munster.
That's right. That's right. They did the same thing.
I imagine they don't get away with that anymore.
No, probably not anymore. But yeah, absolutely. That was the rivalry there among the towns we played. Highland never beat Munster when I went to high school there. But the first year I get down to Ball State, a Highland person saw me on campus and said, "Hey, Dave, guess what happened last week?"
Highland finally won that game.
Highland beat Munster. Maybe not by much, but they did. Yes, that was always the big rivalry, you bet. But it was a lot of fun.
Now, you were mentioning to me also that I think you ran into my old kindergarten teacher, mm-hmm. Mrs. Whitcomb.
There's a lady that lives in the area where my dad is now, who introduced herself and knew my dad and knew that I worked here at WGN and asked me if I knew you. And I said, yes. And she said, well, I was his teacher. So we had a nice conversation about that.
Does he still have trouble coloring outside the lines?
Let me tell you that I'm really glad that people are only running into
You talking
my...
about Matt or me, Joe?
Whoever. I haven't seen either of you guys color in a long time. I don't know.
I'm very happy that you're only running into my kindergarten teacher, Mrs. Whitcomb, because I was still relatively sweet, I guess. I would imagine, back when I was in kindergarten. Now, if you ran into Mrs. Zemniak from my 7th and 8th grade year, she
That's
would tell you stories
story.
Yeah, for about 45 minutes, and you'd probably, you'd sit there with that face like from a movie where you see the, you know, the awful thing that's about to happen, and then you'd say, wow, I guess he turned out okay.
That was me in 4th grade.
4th grade's where you went,
Sal? More outside the hall, in the hall, more than in the class, yes.
Oh, man. Well, I love to tell the stories of the SWAT. Did you didn't go to Catholic school growing up, did you, Dave?
No.
No, yeah. No. See, I went to Catholic school where corporal punishment was just fine. And you know, I'm sure it's not anymore.
Oh, well,
but
actually,
back in the
you're
day,
talking about that. That was still
That was okay in public schools,
use.
Too?
During my years there, yes, that has since changed.
Yeah.
But, oh, yeah, the principals and teachers that were kind of authorized to, you know, when someone stepped out in the hall and then they called another teacher out there, why, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of how things generally tend to go. I would agree with that. And there were some, Mr. Nordyke. Definitely had a big, you know, those fraternity paddles. You remember those fraternity paddles?
Yeah. That's what they were using, right?
Yeah, that's what they had. And me and Rogan Beckman and Mike Bassino had to go visit the nurse's office in second grade. And the nurse's office was on the second floor at St. Tom's. I went to St. Thomas More in Munster.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get
right
called
off
up,
of Calumet Avenue.
Right there,
there
on Calumet Avenue. So we go into the nurse's office because back then schools actually had nurses too.
Yeah, we did too.
And I don't know where the nurse was, but she wasn't helping me out that day. I went in there with Mr. Nordyke and, you know, I'm in second grade and it was bend over and grab your ankles, literally. And then you
what
grab your ankles.
What did you do?
See, and I will protest this till the day I die. I was framed. I was not. There was some school assembly, and it was like a puppet show or something like that. And we had rubber bands that we were like making a chain out of, you know, just goofing around. And I don't know if somebody shot some rubber bands at the puppets or what happened, but somehow.
And they said it was Bubala.
Well, that phrase was probably often uttered.
That
you know,
did
the
it.
First, you know, I was profiled from a young age and brought in. And so me and Rogan and Mike Bassino had to go up there. And I was pretty confused about the whole thing because I didn't truly think we'd done anything wrong, but I guess we had, or somebody in our group had, or whatever, got thrown to us. We go up there, and Rogan went in first. And I hear Mr. Nordyke say, "So you like shooting rubber bands, eh, Rogie?" Door shuts. Whap! I mean, loud. You hear it. He comes out, tears streaming down his face, goes limping back to class. Now, this is on the second floor where all the 8th and 7th grade, the older kids are. This is like, you know, the upper level. That's where those classes
are. Oh, so now you're really going to get it from them.
Well, they don't know. You know, they're in their classrooms. We're down in the nurse's office. But that's the floor we're on. And so I go in next. And I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how this works or anything. So he says, "Turn around and assume the position." And I'm like, I don't know. turn around and bend over and grab your ankles. I'm like, all right. And so I do it. And he just, wham! And I screamed so loud.
Oh, man.
I mean, I screamed loud to the point I walk out of the room and you hear the whole floor laughing.
Oh, wow. That makes it even worse.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. And so I stood out there and I waited for Mike to go in
that
and
is
take
your
his
day.
Punishment.
That's your day that will live in infamy right there.
That was one of them.
That's your day.
Well, wasn't the last time I was in that nurse's office.
How do you think those poor puppets feel, though, Matt? I mean, you know, rubber bands are the bullets of the puppet world.
They were mortified. I apologize. I should have had to write a letter to the puppets, but instead, no, we go right to the corporal punishment. So, Joe, you grew up in a much different time, sir. You're very lucky, aren't you now?
It sounds like I just grew up with a lot more discipline in my life.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I've had my doozies, too.
Wow, these kids, Schwani. I can't believe now I'm on the side. I got to be on the Schwani side saying these kids. Go get a haircut, Joe Brand. What's with that mop you've got going on?
You're not my real
beard
dad.
A little
oh,
bit.
Gosh.
Yeah.
You don't know who your real dad is. Stop. Sorry, Mr. Brand. That was a joke. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Coming up after the news here, we'll get Dr. Kevin Most on the phone and chat about the latest in what's going on with, vaccines coming up with this whole IHSA thing that the students are protesting. They want to be able to play sports again. I get it. The Big Ten is coming back. What's the smart thing to do? What do we need to do to be careful? And what are the thoughts from Dr. Most on a vaccine? We're hearing all sorts of different stories on when a vaccine might be available. Of course, some people are saying before the election there's going to be something out there. Some people are saying spring or late 2021. But then you hear a lot of people saying, well, I'm not taking that first vaccine. I'm not going to do that right away. I want to see. I want to know. And even myself, I'm very pro-vaccine, but I don't know if it's fast-tracked, if it's not going through all the normal CDC protocols. What do we think about that? I was talking to somebody yesterday who was saying, we were talking about it and saying, you know what we'll need, what would make me feel better is Dr. Fauci on national television saying, okay, give me the first dose, here we go. That, I think, would ease a lot of people. Of course, if President Trump was willing to do that, there's a whole other section of the country who would ease their thoughts on that quite a bit. So we'll see what Dr. Most says about when we should be thinking about what's really going to happen and how we should be protecting ourselves and our families right now, especially as we start heading into the colder months with restaurants. There's so much outdoor seating right now, so many places to enjoy dinner or lunch or a drink where you can be outdoors and feel a little bit better about your exposure. As we now start getting the colder weather, what are your thoughts going to be about heading back into restaurants? What's Dr. Most think about going to a movie theater right now? Movies have come back, sort of. They're not doing very well. A lot of people aren't attending them. Maybe the right movie hasn't come out. Maybe people are afraid to get back to it. We'll talk about all of that coming up with Dr. Kevin Most. Matt Bubala here with you, in for Dean Richards, 9:35 in the morning here on 720 WGN. Lashana Tova to all of our Jewish friends out there celebrating a new year. 5781, thank goodness, 5780 is over. Let's hope 5781 is a little bit better than 5780. I know a lot of us are looking forward to 2021. Maybe 2021 will be better, as if magically things are just going to change and 2021 will be better. Something I don't think is going to expire at the end of the year. But so I'm glad that we have the Jewish New Year so we can test out the whole theory on a new year, a new day. Maybe things will get a little bit better. We'll figure it out. So happy New Year to everybody out there celebrating. And it's time right now to bring in our friend Dr. Kevin Most. He is the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital and a frequent guest on WGN Radio. Good morning, Dr. Most. And now something's wrong with this, too. Dr. Most, are you there, sir? There you are. We had the wrong phone pot up. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Matt. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thanks so much for joining us on a Sunday morning. We really appreciate all the time that you spend here on WGN Radio trying to keep us informed and grounded and educated about what's going on, because there's just so much unknown all the time for going on, 8 months now? This is crazy, this unprecedented time in our lives, but thank you. So let me ask you right away first. We're hearing so much about possible vaccines and, all these different dates about when they might be available, and once they're available, how long is it going to take to really produce it? When will people really get it? But what I'm hearing more and more from people is them saying, well, I'm not going to take that right away. And I know there's a lot of questions about vaccines and a lot of people who get bad information get really worried about vaccines, but I think it's somewhat legitimate because there's a lot of concern that a vaccine will get rushed through. And I know a lot of companies have vowed together that we're not going to do that. We're going to go through the proper protocols and everything else. If a vaccine comes out in the next 2, 6, 8 months, how concerned would you be about whether or not you take that vaccine right away?
Yeah, Matt. And, it's interesting. When we look at what is the general public feel right now, about 80% of Americans feel the vaccine approval process has been too hasty. Whether that's been warp speed or whether it's been, some of the comments that have been made. As a physician, I am going to look at the data. I want to make sure two things. One, that it is safe, and two, that it is effective. we have one bite at the apple here. If we lose the confidence of our medical field, our medical staffs, and the public, this is just going to push this vaccine way down the road. So really, although we're all looking at this magic date here of a couple of weeks, forget that, guys. Let's make sure we have the right data that has been proven to be safe and effective before we start to push it. Let's go by science instead of a calendar.
All right, so let me ask you about that. Let's start with the effectiveness, because I've heard that normally there's a certain amount of effectiveness needed to keep moving through. And I believe that threshold has been lowered somewhat in this instance, because even if we had a lower effective rate, just getting people vaccinated at that amount would make such a difference. Where does that stand and your feelings on that?
Yeah, you know, the FDA has said they will be okay with a 50% effective rate. And to put that in perspective, if you look at influenza vaccines, our effective rate on influenza vaccines can go anywhere from 25% to 75%. So we know that from that portion of it, that kind of makes sense, that if it's effective at a 50% level, that at least will be helpful. What we're really trying to get to, Matt, is this thing called herd immunity, where we need to show about 60 to 70% of people have immunity towards COVID. So if we have a 5 to 10% immunity rate just from the illness itself, just from people getting ill in the general public, and then we have a 50% positivity rate for the effectiveness of this, we still need a vast proportion of the country to get the vaccine in order to get to this golden herd immunity, where potentially we can start to see this decrease dramatically and at some time get rid of masks.
Well, and the other question, I guess, with that is getting to that number is how long this could last, because there's a lot of question, I believe, about how long a vaccine will last. What if it's only effective for 2 months? Is there a minimum that we'll get of effectiveness out of it? Not just effectiveness that it's stopping it, but length of duration. And, you know, I think we can all understand if we're going to have to do this annually like a flu vaccine. But is there a possibility or a concern that they'll find something, but it's only fighting it off for 2 to 4 months and it's not effective for a whole year?
You know, that is one of the concerns. Our immune system is pretty amazing, that it has a pretty good memory. You know, if you look at vaccines like polio, like measles, even things like diphtheria or tetanus, where we just get a 10-year kind of limit now, I think what we're really expecting and hoping is two things. One, that this virus doesn't mutate too much year to year. And two, that we're able to get a vaccine that we'll be able to do annually. This is not going to be a polio vaccine where you get it and you're done for your lifetime. This is going to be one, at least initially, where we're going to see some effectiveness, but not really long-term. It would be winning the lottery if we got this to a long-term vaccine fresh out of the box. That will not happen, and people have to understand that. Even the vaccine, when it comes out, Matt, we're going to have to get two shots somewhere between 21 and 28 days apart. So it's not just going to be one vaccine. You're going to get it, and then you're going to get a booster a month later.
And that's not uncommon. People should understand that there's many vaccines where you need a booster, correct?
Absolutely. Yep. There's many vaccines where you need a booster. And everybody knows, you know, when you get your tetanus shot, you know, the doctor's going to ask you, when was your last tetanus? You're essentially getting a booster at that time. Kids, when they first get their first flu shot, are going to get a booster. So everyone's heard of boosters, and this certainly has been shown, at least in the initial phase 1 and phase 2 studies, that the second vaccine is the one that actually gives you that additional coverage.
The concern I have with the idea that it's going to mutate and we're going to have to do this every year, because we have enough conspiracy theories going on now, it's going to turn to people thinking this is big pharma, they generated this, and now this is a big moneymaker. And I think there's going to be a lot of education that's going to be needed from the science side to get people to understand, you know, this is what we need to be safe.
100%. You know, coronavirus is the same virus that causes the common cold, and we've had the common cold forever, and we still haven't been able to get a vaccine for that because we know that it does mutate a little bit here and there. So the mutations in viruses happen all the time, and it's one where this is not the big pharma doing anything. This is science and nature happening. And we just hope that the mutations are good. Matter of fact, if you look at now, the first mutation we had is actually pretty good. The initial virus that came into our country where we had all those hospitalizations and all those problems had mutated by the time we got to June. And now we're seeing a virus that is not as virulent, but is much more infectious. In other words, it's spread quicker, but it's not causing a lot of the illnesses that we saw early on.
So that was a mutation. Is the original form still out there and spreading, or is just the mutation spreading now?
No, in the United States, it's pretty much just the mutation, although there are still some pockets with the original. Worldwide, you know, if you've seen just recently, we're seeing a big surge now in Europe again as they're getting their second wave.
Sure.
I haven't seen what the composition of that one is. That would be concerning if it's a new one, because then potentially that would be headed our way as well.
You mentioned the second wave. Early on, we talked a lot about flattening the curve, and then we're going to have to deal with the second wave. We had this huge upswing in numbers in the last month or two, but I've not heard that referred to as the second wave, more as we weren't as smart and as careful as we should be, so it came back strong. Are we still waiting for a second wave?
Yes. So we really never, I shouldn't say never, we got pretty close to kind of dampening down the curve. And remember, everyone has to understand that flattening the curve was made for one main reason. We could not stress the health system with ICU beds, ventilators. We had to slow this down, and this would have been much more devastating than it was. So we did at least dampen the curve. Now what we're seeing is two things. One, we're seeing some complacency. So we're seeing less people wearing masks in some environments. We're seeing more crowding around. So we do expect to see an increase. Plus, we knew coming into the fall, the chance of a second wave was very, very possible. And in Europe, it's certainly showing us this. So we're saying it may be an extension of the first wave versus the second wave actually being a true second wave.
We're going to take a quick break. Dr. Moss, you okay with answering some listener questions?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Good. 312-981-7200. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer of Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital, answers yours next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Dean Richards this morning, 947. Happy Sunday morning to you, everybody. We're chatting with Dr. Kevin Most. He is the Chief Medical Officer, of course, at Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. You hear him on, I believe, every show on the station at some point or another during the week when he's giving us the latest information. And we can give some to you as well. What are your specific questions for Dr. Most? 312-981-7200. We'll get to those questions in just a moment. Dr. Most, you mentioned safety as the other thing. Efficacy and safety are the two concerns. So when do we truly know that a vaccine is safe? These trials, I mean, it's less than a year since we first knew this was even going on. So what is the normal process and length of time before you determine a vaccine is safe? And how good do you feel about, you know, this process right now? Are they over rushing the process, or are they going through what is necessary to make sure that this vaccine is safe enough?
Matt, let's just put it in perspective. The fastest we've ever made a vaccine in the past has been 4 years, and that was the measles vaccine. So, all right, am I concerned? Yes. Actually, another reason is that once we give the vaccine, if I were to give the vaccine to you, it is now my duty for the next 2 years to monitor you for side effects. So I understand the need to get it out there, but we need to show at least that the immediate short term is very safe, and then monitor as long as for any long term effects. So I'm really going to look for the data, the full data from the phase 3 studies, before I come out there and say, you guys, let's get this vaccine. Let's get this moving. And I think that that's the opportunity that we have as physicians, and we took an oath to do no harm, is to make sure that we look at the science, look at the data behind this before we start promoting that. You know, if you have doctors that say, go get it, but I'm not going to get it personally,
yeah,
you know, there's that dichotomy of, wait a second, what are you trying to do to me? So we have one shot at the apple at this one, and I think it's really important that we get the data, make sure it's effective, make sure it's as safe as we possibly can right now, and then make a determination as to our recommendations.
I was saying earlier on the show, I was talking with a friend last night, and we said that, you know, if Dr. Fauci on national television said, okay, first dose, here we go, put it in my arm, I think that would help a lot of people say, okay, you know, somebody, for those of us that trust Dr. Fauci, I know we're very divided as a country right now, but having somebody in leadership who you trust say, yes, I'm going to do this, I feel it's safe, would go a long way. I don't know how things will work like that or not. But tell me, with the vaccine, whatever vaccine we come up with, I know I feel good because I'm guessing there has never been the brain power in our history dedicated to one thing as there is right now dedicated to this virus and trying to figure out a solution for it. So I feel good about the possibilities. When we talk about the safety, I would guess that whatever the vaccine is, it's sort of a derivative of some other vaccine. Is there a little bit of baked in, we know it's at least a level of safety because we've used this in some shape or form in other vaccines? Or is this something that's so brand new that there's going to be more concern of, we really don't know for a while what the safety is going to be?
No, Matt, you hit it spot on. If you thought about this, years ago, we used to have one or two companies making influenza vaccine. And when one company had a bad production year, boy, we were short of vaccine. Let's put this in perspective. We have 120 companies looking to make a vaccine. We have 50 right now in the United States that are in some form of either phase one, phase two, or phase three trials. This is unprecedented that we have this many companies focusing the brilliant minds that we have on this vaccine. So that is extremely reassuring. And now it's going to be, you know, Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca appear to be the leaders. But I can tell you, we have 9 vaccines in phase 3 studies. We have 14 in phase 2. We have 27 in phase 1, all of them looking at safety and efficacy. So that's really reassuring. Science has really progressed quite a bit since the measles vaccine. So we really are in much better shape from a safety point as well as a technology.
Good. All right. Real quick, we only have a couple minutes left. Let's get in a call or two. Mary, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Matt. Hi, Dr. Most. I'm a senior, 73. I do have a part-time job, which I've been doing from home. I went into the office for the first time on Friday, but I've been isolating as much as possible. But I did start to see my two little grandsons, ages 7 and 9, back in early July, and now they've been doing remote learning, but they're going to back to the classroom in mid-October, and I'm wondering if it'll be dangerous for me to be around them once they're back in the classroom and being exposed to all the other children who've been exposed to everybody else.
Great question, Mary. Hold on and listen. Go ahead, Dr. Most.
Yeah, Mary, I would say, you know, let's make sure we're doing what we're supposed to do. You know, it's terrible that we take grandparents away from their grandkids, but let's make sure that we physically distance. Let's make sure we're both wearing masks. Let's make sure we're not giving them big hugs and spending a lot of time with them. So you can still see them from a distance and still interact with them. But as kids go back to school, we know there are going to be outbreaks, and many kids are asymptomatic. So I just tell all seniors and all vulnerable populations, please be careful when you're around any school-age children as we go back into the school year.
Dr. Most, when we talk about the school and what's going on with the kids going back and forth, what is your thought on, you know, Chicago's doing all at home. My kids are in a Catholic school out in Woodstock. They started out in person. Then they had to have 2 weeks at home because of a breakout. Now they're on it every other day. What would your overall advice be for schools right now?
Matt, I have been pretty solid on my determination on this. I think kids need to be back in school. If it's a hybrid plan, that's great. It allows the physically distancing in the classroom because these rooms weren't built for the numbers that we're talking about. 25 to 50% of kids with child abuse are noted by the teacher. Over 75% of learning disabilities are identified by a teacher. Parents are not great teachers. They are great parents, but they're not going to be the one that's going to teach somebody who has ADD or dyslexia. We need to make sure that these kids get it. And the other thing that's really sad, Matt, is if you look at mental health issues right now in kids, the number of suicides, the number of drug abuse that's going up right now in kids, they need that social interaction to feel somewhat normal again. So I'm a big proponent of hybrid. I think you get the balance of in class as well as at home, and you can do it safely.
Dr. Most, we only have a minute left. Let's talk real quick about the ALS Walk for Life that's coming up next weekend.
Yeah, Matt, I really appreciate you taking time to do this. You know, we look at all the charities right now, and they're missing out on their golf outings, they're missing out on their walks, and this is one that's kind of near and dear to my heart, and I really would like people to consider it. You know, Les Turner ALS Center at Northwestern Medicine has been there for 40 years, and you talk about a charity that is so well-balanced. Not only do they focus on providing care for patients with ALS and support to those families, and they let them know what opportunities are out there for treatment, they also are a great place for research for a cure and a treatment. Are we close to a cure? No. But are we getting treatments? Absolutely. Medications showing the slowing of the progression of this illness are out there. So next Saturday is their walk, and it's a virtual walk. You know, the walk normally, you know, ends up at Soldier Field, and it's a very emotional time for many people who had a family member or friend go through this. So I just ask people, hey, go online, donate. You can go to the website, and it's easy to make a donation. If you're motivated, get a team together to do it. But really, you know, they're really looking at just participation and awareness. It's a terrible, debilitating, terminal disease. So go on, give $10. It'll make you feel better, and I can tell you it's going to make an impact. And Matt, I appreciate you allowing me just a minute to talk about it, because these charities need those research dollars to make an impact in the future. And I can tell you that the Les Turner Group at the ALS Center, they are phenomenal people whose hearts are in the right place, and they know how to help families deal going through this illness with a loved one, as well as promote the research side. So great balanced charity, and really appreciate the opportunity.
LesTurnerALS.org, LesTurnerALS.org. Go there and give some money. And while we can't walk in person this year, we can all get out in our neighborhood, and we can still do our walk and donate the money and still just get out and walk. You mentioned the mental health issues that kids are having. I think we're all having them, Dr. Most. I think there is a epidemic of mental health issues that we're having in America right now that are probably going to get stronger. So whatever we can do to take care of ourselves as well and our mental health, and certainly getting out, especially while the weather's still good, and enjoying walks while we can, and breathing that air and doing whatever we can to feel some sense of normally, I have to imagine is a pretty good idea.
100%. You know, it's good for our immune system. It's good for our mental health. You know, the beauty of a virtual walk is if it's snowing or raining next Saturday, you can still participate. So, you know, the virtuals are great, but you're absolutely right. Everyone should take the opportunity today to get outside. That vitamin D is great for our immune system, but like you said, it's more important for our mental health as well.
Dr. Most, we got to get to the news, but we will hear you, I'm sure, on WGN Radio this week. Thanks again, as always, for your time.
You got to take care, Matt.
All right, sir. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Again, everybody, LesTurnerALS.org. Check that out and donate the money if you can. We appreciate it. Here with you in for Dean Richards this morning. Happy Sunday morning to you, everybody. 10:10 a.m. on 720 WGN. We're here until White Sox baseball, playoff bound. White Sox baseball comes up at 11:30 a.m. this morning. They are 5 games away. The magic number is 5 from clinching the division. They're already in the playoffs. So let's see what happens for the White Sox today. And then later in the day, it's a full day of sports here at WGN. Hamp, OB, and Kaz will be on at 5 o'clock post-Bears game. All I can tell you for sure, I don't know what's going to happen in the game, but they will be angry. They will not be happy. They will be angry. There will be a lot of, you know, if we talked to Dr. Most about our mental health, and we're all really struggling. I think no matter how well life has gone for you during all of this, I think we can all admit we're struggling a little bit. Hamp, OB, and Kaz is a safe space. It's sort of like going to an axe-throwing place or a place where you get to beat things up safely. You know, Hamp, OB, and Kaz is where you just let it all out.
It's like the radio equivalent to punching a pillow.
Yes. Yes, it's like when you see the people in therapy and they put on the big suits and then they get to beat each other up. That's Hamp, OB, and Kaz. Because pretty much, Joe, whether the Bears win by 30 or lose by 50, they're going to be angry.
They pretty much have the same type of show before the season starts because they're still angry about the year before.
Yes.
I remember one time Mark Harmon had OB on, and he just jumped right into the broadcast. Literally, the first thing he said was complaining about how the Bears did not score a touchdown in the season opener against Green Bay last season. It was like the first thing he said prior to this coming into this year.
I need to send Carm a note before the show today and say, hey, make sure you mention the score, because this is the one show you tune into that you're like looking into. Did they win? I don't know what happened. Did they win? Did they lose? I'm not sure.
I was just thinking maybe we should give them those cushion suits and let them have at it. But then you know what? They'd lose all their aggression and it'd be a super calm show and that wouldn't be good.
We can't have that, but every time I hear OB on the air, all I can think of, because I've been in the studio, is I mentally picture where the AED paddles are, because I think at some point somebody had better be prepared. It's sort of like an old Superfan skit where they got to keep bringing George Went back to life. OB gets so heated about things that I worry for the man. I do.
I never thought about that. They're like the super fans in real life, but the opposite way.
Yeah, exactly. But they actually know what they're talking about. So there's that. So Hamp, OB, and Kaz at 5 o'clock. It's your mental health break from the Bears and from life. So we'll have that coming up later on WGN Radio. What we want to do right now, though, is get a check in on your money and your life. The stock market's gone through the roof. Jobless claims have gone through the roof. I don't know what to make heads or tails of. And I see a headline: Americans are rating retirement savings during the coronavirus pandemic. Nearly 3 in 10 Americans have decreased or stopped their retirement savings due to the economic fallout, one survey found. Joining us on the phone right now from Kingsview Wealth Management is our friend Paul Nolte. You've heard him on the Wintrust Business Lunch many times. Hey, Paul, how are you this morning?
Doing very well, enjoying the sunshine. Thank you.
Enjoy it while you can. I really appreciate you taking time on a Sunday. I know we've heard you often on the Wintrust Business Lunch, so we always thank you for your advice for our WGN Radio listeners. That headline that Americans, 3 in 10 Americans, have either decreased or stopped retirement savings due to the pandemic. What's your quick take on that? Is that a really bad idea, or is it, hey, it's a tough time? We can pause that from time to time.
That's a hard one to say. You should pause it from time to time. And I think part of it, too, is we've gotten a lot of help from the government through the end of July, at least. For those that are still working, remember that you're not going to get a pension anymore. So the pension really is kind of on you to take care of through your 401k. And in many cases, companies are still matching your 401k contribution. So in a way that's, quote unquote, free money. So even if they give you 25% on your 5% contribution, that's 25% more than what you would have had if you didn't contribute to it. So I think that's really kind of a last ditch. You know, things are really bad. Need to stop your 401k contribution. So we would encourage people to try to continue to find a way to at least make that minimum amount that companies are matching. You may want to dial it back if that's a problem. You know, if you were doing 10%, maybe at least come back a little bit if it's a struggle for you. But you certainly want to match or at least make as much of a contribution as you can to get the company match.
And I imagine that's one thing is, you know, don't decrease what you're putting in if you can. Decrease a little bit if you absolutely have to, but make that a last resort. But I would imagine you would say don't take money out of there if you can possibly avoid it.
Right. You know, that one's a real tough one because it hurts in a couple different ways. If you're under the age of 59 and a half, you take the money out, and I'm not talking about a loan, I'm talking about taking money out directly. You're going to get a 10% penalty, and the dollars that you take out go on your income taxes as ordinary income. And there's the potential of bumping yourself up into a higher tax bracket. Some options are to take out a loan, so you're kind of repaying yourself, but then you're also foregoing the potential returns in the markets while you are out of that, and now you have to pay that back. You get laid off, change jobs, now that money is due immediately, and if you're unable to repay it, again, that comes out as a withdrawal, and the fees and penalties and income taxes are due. So that gets to be a slippery slope, taking those dollars out, because then you're winding up with a big tax bill come year end.
Paul, there has been some talk about waiving those fees, about the government passing something to allow that for a short term. That has not happened?
That's not happened yet. You know, we're still talking about a lot of different things that are going on as far as potential changes for a lot of these programs. And until it actually passes, I wouldn't bet on anything happening until we actually get that signature.
312-981-7200 is the number. If you have a question for Paul about your savings or about what you should be doing with things, we'll take that. He is with Kingsview Management. You can, after we're done, not right now, you can call Paul also directly. I'll also give out an email that you can reach out to Paul for advice. When we talk about savings right now, if you are in a place where you're doing okay, where this has not completely gotten to you yet, but you're hearing, I feel like, Paul, I'm torn two different ways on what's going on in the world, because the stock market keeps going up, but the jobless numbers are terrible. We know that we have added all this debt to the national economy, that cities are suffering with tax losses because of the revenue that's not coming in from restaurants and entertainment and everything else. Where do you see things going, and what should we be doing right now? If we can save, where should we be putting that money?
Well, you know, the market has gone up a lot, mainly because of the technology stocks, and that is a direct result of the economic shutdown that we went through. So a lot of those companies like Amazon, like Apple, Peloton, those companies that benefited from us staying at home have pushed the markets higher. Now what we're starting to see is the economy starting to open up. We're starting to see restaurants, we're starting to see theaters and airlines and all of those types of things coming back. Now, mind you, they're still not anywhere near what they were before, but there's an improvement. And Wall Street looks not so much at the magnitude of the change, but the direction of the change. As long as things are getting better, Wall Street's happy, and that's part of the reason why we're seeing that improvement in the markets. So if you are looking at the markets and saying, well, all right, technology's done great, we've got to buy a lot of technology. Technology right now is kind of the play, if you will, if the economy continues to do very poorly. If we don't have that recovery or we shut back down again, technology would be a good place to go. Right now, it's very expensive, in our opinion, and we'd be looking at other parts of the economy as things open up. So transportation, we still have to move goods and services. Some travel, we're starting to see some travel open up. Manufacturing, we still have to make things. Those types of companies have been kind of passed over during the last 6 months, and many of those companies look to be providing, at least today, some very good value.
Is the market overweight right now? Do you see a major correction coming up?
Major correction, yes, and most of that is driven by technology. Typically, this is a lousy part of the year, and especially in an election year, September and October tend to be very poor parts of the calendar. During election years, September, October tend to be a little bit worse than normal. Does that mean that you should sell everything now and wait until after the election? Again, probably not. Our view is that the correction will probably be driven more by technology companies and other parts of the market that I mentioned before, like manufacturing and even some international, probably are going to skate through okay and do fine. Where the correction is probably going to happen is going to be more focused on tech.
We're speaking with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Wealth Management. We'll take some calls for you, for him, next. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala in for Dean Richards here on 720 WGN. If you are, you know, I'm going to turn 50 next year, so I've got some money in a 401k. I don't have nearly enough. I don't know what I should have. All these things. But we have listeners who are about to turn 60 or older. You said that there will be some corrections. At what point do you say, and you should be talking to a wealth advisor, of course, about this, but what's your concern for people that are hoping to retire in the next 10 years about where their money is within a stock market that is, at least in the tech sector, so overweight right now?
Yeah, there's a couple things there. One is a lot of people don't look at their 401ks. They get it set up when they first start working, and they said, okay, I'm going to retire in 2050. I'm going to buy that target date fund, and then that's the last they look at it. And it's one of those things that you should review every 6 months, maybe a year, because there's changes that happen inside the 401k. They bring in new funds. They get rid of funds. So you want to take a look at that. And I think the other part of it is, saving enough. A lot of people, because again, it's on us to save for our retirement. We don't have those pensions anymore. So it really becomes incumbent on us to actually put away a lot more money for ourselves. $1 million, unfortunately, doesn't go as far as it used to.
How crazy is it to have to say that sentence?
Well, with interest rates essentially at zero, you know, you think you're only going to get 1% maybe out of the fixed income if you were to put it all into fixed income. That's $10,000 a year. That's not nearly much to live on.
No, it's not. Especially, I think a lot of us think, well, we'll have the house paid off where our expenses won't be that bad. But you'd also like to be able to live a little when you get to that age. And you have to remember property taxes and every other thing that you'll still be paying, even if you're able to get a mortgage taken care of, right?
No, absolutely. And what will happen when you initially retire is you want to do all the things that you couldn't do when you were working. So travel is a big one. usually in the first 5 or 10 years, doing a lot of traveling, going places, seeing things that you couldn't do before. So that's where a lot of the money gets spent. And certainly, you know, again, you know, you want to make sure that you save for those dollars. And then the medical expenses pick up after you're age 70 plus. And again, that's a huge part of the bill later on in life.
Let's get to a quick call. Mike, you're on 720 WGN with Paul Nolte. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Mike. I just have a question, sir. I purchased a new home a little while ago, and my old home sold a little while later. So I had some equity build up naturally in my old house. I can physically pay off my new house and with the mortgage. Is it better to do that or just save the money from the equity and do something with it? Because as you said, you know, you might get 1%, maybe.
All right, listen in, Mike. Go ahead, Paul. What do you think about that?
Yeah, there's two schools of thought on that, and it's always a discussion I have with clients, and it comes down to cash flow. I just refinanced my own house and pushed it out 30 years, and looking at the expected return of the financial markets, maybe not in the short run, but over 30 years, certainly being something north of 3%, which is the cost of the mortgage. I'm able then to put that money away and invest it for the very long term. I can use those dollars to pay off my current mortgage or use the dollars to pay the monthly payment. I can deplete that account if I'd like to and use that to pay the mortgage so I don't have to take it out of my checking account. That's the financial decision. The other one is the emotional decision of I don't want debt. I can't stand it. Don't want to have it in retirement. And pay it off. And if that makes you feel better, then by all means do it. If it keeps you up at night to say, oh, I have a mortgage, I'm 60, 65 years old, I don't want a mortgage anymore, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to pay it, it's not worth staying awake trying to figure that out. Make the payment. But a pure financial decision, I think it makes a lot of sense to push that out. And at current very low interest rates, the returns in the market should be much greater than that over a 30-year period. Maybe not over a 6 or 12-month period, but certainly over 30 years.
You know, Paul, one thing I feel like we don't think that much about when we hear, oh, these mortgage rates are so low or there's 0% financing on cars. So even if we don't have great places that we want to invest money, but we have some money right now, we might think about certain things like that. But your credit rating matters so much in those things. That incredible new mortgage finance rate is not going to be as incredible if your credit score isn't good. So should we be looking into trying to make sure our credit score is as good as possible to be able to take advantage of certain things as the, you know, as we're uncertain about how the economy is going to go?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that you should be keeping close track of is making sure that on a monthly basis you're paying off your credit card. The key to all of this is going back to our parents and grandparents' days of living within your means. I make X and I live on X minus something. So I think where a lot of people get caught is, I'm going to use the credit card to buy this. It's a great deal. I really want to have that. And I'm going to pay it out over the next couple months or so. And then something else happens. And now they can't. And things get stretched out. And they start winding up getting behind the eight ball. And so that is very, very important, is to make sure that your credit score is as good as it can be, that you're on top of your debt, you're taking care of your credit card debt, paying that off as quickly as you can, because those rates, unlike the mortgage rates, are still very high, double-digit rates. Mortgage rates, obviously, very, very low. Yeah. The credit card is where everybody gets caught.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Wealth Management. You can reach Paul P. Nolte, P-N-O-L-T-E, at kingsview.com. And Paul, you're okay with me giving out the phone number, too?
Sure.
312-237-3813, 312-237-3813. I'll give that out again after the news, everybody, if you want to take it down. Paul, thanks so much, as always, for being on the air with us, and have a great weekend.
You do likewise. Thank you so much.
All right.
When I was a teenager, younger than a teenager, how I would be in the basement.
Yeah.
Right? playing. Great. But tell what it was.
We had an old produce counter from some store that closed, and Dean had rigged it up like a radio station and pretended he was a DJ. Never thought it would end up like this. I'm so proud of him, so very proud of him.
Hey, there is no
Very nicely done, Ryan. That was very touching. That was Dean Richards with his mom from a remote he had done here at WGN Radio. Dean's mom passed away this week, everybody. That's why I'm filling in this morning. She died at Evanston Hospital after a long battle with dementia and heart issues. Dean mentioned that on his Facebook post earlier this week. So our hearts go out to Dean, and we're thinking of him. He'll be back here next weekend, and I'm sure he's going to share more memories of his mom when he comes back. So thoughts going out to Dino today. 10:37 in the morning here on 720 WGN. Our buddy Joe Brand is in the sports department. Joe, we got a big full day of WGN Radio Sports ahead of us. 11:30, we'll go to White Sox pregame. Got a White Sox game today. Who are they playing? Where are they at now?
Finishing a series against the Cincinnati Reds.
Against the Reds, that's right. And the Cubs are trying to help them out by beating the Twins. And they started out well, but last night, and it was a good game last night. I turned it off to watch something else with the kids. And then I came back to see that it was not a very good game for the Cubs last night. And I'm getting destroyed by the Twins. So the Sox magic number you were telling me earlier is 5 now. They've already clinched the playoffs.
Correct.
One of 8,000 teams that will make the playoffs this season. But now they're playing for position. Tell me, how are the playoffs working? Because there were all these stories this week that if there's a Cubs-White Sox World Series, it's going to be played in Texas. But the playoffs will start in the different cities, or have they not really even figured this completely out yet?
No, they pretty much solidified it earlier this week. So, yeah, 16 teams are making the playoffs, eight teams from each league. If you win your division, you're guaranteed a 1-3 seed.
Okay.
If you are second place in your division, you are guaranteed a 4-6 seed. And between those seeds, obviously, it goes by better record. But for the opening round, as you get your seeding 1-8, it'll be 1-8, 2-7, like you normally have it. And the top four teams in each league will get home field advantage for that first wild card series. But that means 3 straight games at home. Not go here, then go there, then go back here, or anything like that. After that wild card round, the National League will play their playoff games in Texas, and the American League will play their playoff games in California.
Hold on for a second. I don't know if I just heard you right. The first round, the wild card round, is a best of what?
Best of 3.
And all 3 games are being played at the home team's field?
Correct. Which is why it's very, very
important.
Well,
you got to keep playing hard now. You can't just rest on making the playoffs. Holy cow.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing. Walking in this morning, Dave Schwann goes, so what are the chances of a Cubs-Sox World Series? And anytime you get two or both those teams competitive, that's what everyone starts to ask. If the playoffs weren't so funky this year, with number one being a best of 3 series to start off the whole playoffs, the other thing being, right now, there's no off days in between these series until in between the league championship series and the World Series.
For any team? So, like, they'll play all 3 games 3 days in a row, you mean?
You could play basically 15 games in a row.
Wow. So they will have, I guess if you sweep, if you win in 2 games, you'll at least get 1 day off.
Yeah, that's the only way to guarantee yourself an off day.
But so you make the playoffs, wild card round, 1-3, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday you play. On Thursday, the second round will start.
Correct.
And that will be a best of 7?
Best of 5. Then it goes into the normal thing, division series, 5-game series, league series, 7-game series. It's wild. It really is. So, I mean, I think it really affects the White Sox because one of their biggest flaws is their rotation right now. You got Lucas Giolito. You got Dallas Keuchel. Game 3 kind of looks like Dane Dunning with the way he's been pitching lately. After that, it's Dylan Cease, who's been pretty inconsistent this year. I mean, the White Sox biggest flaw right now is their rotation. They got a great 1-2 punch, but after that, it gets a little dicey. But the other thing the White Sox have is this explosive offense that can blast a home run anytime somebody comes up to the plate, and that can just tear apart the other team's bullpen. So it's very odd. It's very weird. We've never experienced anything like this, so it's very difficult to really hone in. And the other thing is, it's baseball. It's a best of 3 series. The worst team ever could beat the 27 Yankees in a best of 3 series.
Just got to win 2 games in a row on the road. That's not impossible.
Exactly.
And you say it's so fascinating because if they're going to play it like that with these crazy no day off things, because in recent years baseball has gotten to like you have so many days off in the playoffs, you could go with a 2-man rotation sometimes, it seems. So if we're going to have this every day, I wonder if we're going to see some really interesting chances taking place. For example, the Sox have this struggle with the rotation. They start game 1 and they put 10 runs on the board in the first 4 innings. is there going to be a temptation for Ricky Renteria to say, well, he's only thrown 30 pitches.
That's
a day off. We bring him. I mean, will managers take risks like that?
Probably. I mean, that hardly seems like a risk, though. I mean, that's just like a best-case scenario for the White Sox.
Yeah,
I mean,
but you pull a pitcher in the third inning up 10, then suddenly in the eighth inning you're up 2.
Well, and the other thing is you probably want to keep him at least on a little bit of a schedule, so yeah. maybe at least let him go 4, maybe 5, just to make sure he gets his work in still.
But
sometimes,
then you wouldn't bring him back 2 days later if he went 5,
if
right?
If it's the playoffs, you might.
Oh, man.
I mean, if it's the playoffs, you might. That's just a whole new beast of this whole situation that really no one is used to at all.
It's going to be fun to see some of the intensity with this. All right, so Sox have clinched the playoffs. Magic number is 5 to clinch the division, which they really want to do, or you want to finish at least in the top 4. So they don't have to win the division, but in second place, they have to be better than any other second place team, right?
Yes, which they probably will do. They have the second best winning percentage right now. But the other thing is, I mean, you still want those higher seeds as you go
along. Yeah, because you
want
to play a worse team. You want to play a team that, because the eighth place team in both leagues is going to be about a 500 ball club, it looks like right now, right? I mean, the Reds are holding on. I think the Reds, as of yesterday, were in eighth place.
They are, yeah. And that's the thing. Milwaukee's right behind them. So even though the National League Central hasn't been as stellar as everyone thought, there's this whole clump of teams with the Cubs, Cardinals, Reds, and Brewers. And luckily the Cubs do have a pretty decent lead over them, but everything is so close with everything going on in there. The only National League team that's clinched anything are the Dodgers, because they're far and away the better team in the National League.
Yeah.
So that's what the Cubs are kind of hoping for, too, is to get a decent spot in the seeding. And then hopefully, like, L.A. or San Diego gets knocked out in that first round, and you kind of help your cause moving forward. And then we talked about, you know, not having an off day. This could benefit the Cubs, because the Cubs' bullpen hasn't been that great. Their rotation has been really good at the get-go, kind of faltered off, has come back to somewhere in the middle ground there. But, I mean, now you've got Yu Darvish, Kyle Hendricks, Alec Mills all of a sudden looking like a great number 3. So it's a whole different situation for the Cubs in the playoff regime, too.
And where are the Cubs at as far as just clinching the playoffs itself? I know to...
They're at six.
They're at six. to clinch the playoffs. The Sox have already clinched. So is the eighth place team in the American League doing much worse than 500? Like, how have the Sox already clinched, but the Cubs are still 5 games away just from clinching the playoffs?
Again, it goes down to there's a lot of National League Central teams that are fighting at those bottom spots.
Okay.
So, right now, let's see. The Cubs are 5.5 games above Cincinnati, who, you know, just are tied with St. Louis.
Yeah.
The Cubs still have 8 games left.
Yeah.
Cincinnati has 7 games left. So there's still time to get that done. But yeah, the White Sox were just so far ahead, and their division is very competitive with Minnesota and Cleveland, but because the Sox were so far ahead of a team like Toronto, who is 500, and Seattle was another team they had to fend off, and Detroit, I mean, the separation there is so much greater, that's why they were able to clinch earlier.
Sure. So it's going to be very exciting what week and a half, and are the Cardinals trying to play like 100 games in the next week and a half? Because they, you know, last week I was looking at the standings, and the Cardinals at that time, like literally with 2 weeks left in the season, I think had to play 6 more games than the Cubs had to.
It, I mean, well, they lost, what, 15 on the schedule in the middle of the year because they had so many players testing positive for the coronavirus. Yeah, I forget what the actual number was, but they were finishing the year with something like 57 games in 51 days. Or maybe even something less than that. But here, I quickly pulled up their schedule. Yeah, and they had a doubleheader on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Wow.
They're playing every day this rest of the week until Sunday, with a doubleheader coming up on Friday as well.
And this is the last week. Next Sunday is the last.
Yeah, is the finale of the regular season.
And then when do the playoffs start? Not until Tuesday, I'm assuming?
The Tuesday,
at least a day off?
I forget which it is, but one, it's either the American League beginning on Tuesday and then the National League beginning on Wednesday. But what bugs me is I don't get why baseball had to push this there's no off days thing, because you're going to get baseball every day regardless.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's because they've got so many, they don't want it to go too late, but that doesn't make sense if you're bubbling down in warm weather places.
Exactly.
This could end in November and it wouldn't really matter that much.
Exactly. And I think you could still sneak an off day in, you know, like you could, because how many times do we see teams winning a series early, you know, both teams, and they're ready to match up against each other, and they got to wait 3 to 4 days to play a series. Yeah. You can make that temporary. You can bring that series up because it's not the same. It's not like people have tickets. It's not like people are scheduling their lives around these games. They just want to watch the game.
Maybe it's a concern about the virus, and the longer we leave these teams in places, the greater chance something goes wrong and derails things.
Possibly, but you know what? Number one, they're doing the bubble because they saw the success that the NBA and the NHL had with the bubble that did things phenomenally. And, and baseball looked like they were idiots at the beginning of this whole season.
Right.
But since then, they have really honed down on precautions and making sure that they don't do anything they shouldn't be doing. And they've had zero tests in the last couple of goes.
So we've got White Sox pregame coming up at 11:30 today, White Sox baseball, and then we've got Chicago Bears postgame with the Three Bears coming up at 5 o'clock. Let's talk about that next, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Dean Richards here on 720 WGN. We'll get the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up at the top of the hour. Joe Brand from WGN Radio Sports is with us. Big day of sports coming up, as we mentioned, White Sox baseball in a little bit. And then later in the day at 5 o'clock, the Three Bears, Hamp, Obie, and Kaz, I believe with Mark Carmen trying to do traffic control as they chat up whatever is going to happen at Soldier Field in front of no fans against the New York Giants today. Joe, what's your thoughts on the Bears? Weren't favored last week, are favored this week. How are the Giants looking, and what do you think we're going to see today?
Well, I think the biggest thing, it's somewhat breaking news, looks like Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn will both be active today, which is really good news for the Bears. I do want to play this really short clip that Matt Nagy said about both those guys in playing and how much of a factor they become.
But anytime you have Robert Quinn on one side and Khalil Mack on another side, what that can do is make them know, you know, off offensively, you got to know where everybody's at now. It's not, you can't just pick a side. So
the acquisition of Robert Quinn in the offseason, I think, helps the idea of Khalil Mack coming back to the 2018 Khalil Mack.
I was going to say, was Khalil Mack active last week or last year? Because I remember the first year, I went to that first game in Green Bay. I was up there. It was my first time ever in Lambeau. And then Mack had just signed. He hadn't really had a training camp. And then suddenly comes in the game, and it's insanity. And that whole first year, it was just like crazy. And now, I don't know if everybody figured out what to do and the Bears can't figure out how to help him or what, but he's not getting the pressure that he had. That what happened?
I don't know. I can't break down the X's and O's of an NFL game as well as other people, but I'd imagine it's a little bit of both. I mean, offenses are putting a little bit more of a bigger spotlight on Mack. Maybe Mack is just not as productive as he was in that first year with the Bears. I know what you mean. I feel like all my friends went out and bought Khalil Mack jerseys right after that game against
yes,
the Packers
did.
And turned this whole season around. But again, yeah, so acquiring Robert Quinn maybe takes a little bit of the pressure off of him and then can really utilize both those guys with some defensive pressure. I mean, yeah, New York clearly not that impressive of a team. That's the thing, Matt. This team could go 2-0 and what does it really say about a team that's 2-0 that came back to beat a Lions team that was really hindered with their backfield and pulled a comeback out of nowhere in the fourth quarter? They take down somewhat of a weak Giants team, and all of a sudden the Bears are 2-0. I think they still got a lot to prove. A lot is obviously going to ride on Mitch Trubisky. We heard Matt Nagy talk about maybe running the football a little bit more this year or this week, and I think that would be a good idea, but you know, last week's game, they were behind most of the time,
right,
and they didn't feel the option to run as much. I mean, Montgomery got 13 carries.
They still stuck with it pretty good, right? I mean, people were pretty happy overall with the dedication to the run last week.
Yeah, but then when the game was on the line, which is so weird because that's when Mitch Trubisky can just turn on the jets you know, go into fire mode like NBA Jam and just connect on passes.
Did he save his career in that fourth quarter last week? Would he be starting if we lose that game and he looked like he generally looked? I mean, I didn't feel he'd had that terrible of a game, but some people really did up until that fourth quarter. Did he save his career right there, at least for another week?
I think he saved his season. Mm-hmm. I don't know about his career. I'm with you, though. I was thinking, okay, it's not all Trubisky's fault, but he doesn't look great. I mean, there were still the overthrown passes, but there were a lot of catchable passes that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But it's still, for some reason, when he's got to make that quick decision whether to run, whether to throw, he's still able to be successful in those high tense situations, but a lot of times the game just gets out of hand so quickly. He's not in that too often, and that's what we saw against Detroit. Now, granted, again, how many cornerbacks did they lose to injuries towards the end of that game in week one? So that is playing a factor as well. But yeah, I think I mean, heck, they brought in Nick Foles, a guy that Matt Nagy already liked. There was supposed to be a quarterback competition in the offseason. There was no way for these guys to actually compete because they couldn't really work out and such. The numbers benefited Trubisky, so they go with Trubisky. Trubisky wins. Like, if that fourth quarter doesn't happen, I see Nick Foles starting today. Yeah. But I think he saved his season. I don't know about his career, but maybe, yeah, I'd imagine it's still a week-by-week basis, but you still need to see a lot from him this week and moving forward.
Well, it was nice to see them win game one for the first time in 5 or 6 years, I think. That's crazy to think.
Wow, is that true, huh?
Yeah. I thought somebody said since 13 or 14, they had lost 5 straight opening day games, I believe. And still recover to have some decent seasons. I know. I see Joe's wheels turning. He's thinking about that.
Well, I mean, clearly the last two against the Packers. And what's funny is I still feel like, I don't feel like, I keep thinking they won that first game against Green Bay. Just because, I'm talking 2 years ago.
Yeah, Green Bay.
Yeah.
Well, we won a lot of it, Joe. We just didn't win towards the end.
You didn't win the most important one. Story of Bears fans' lives, right?
Yes. Well, we'll be tuning in for Hampo B and Kaz at 5 o'clock tonight. Thanks so much for hanging out with us, Joe. We appreciate it as always. And we'll enjoy the game. We'll enjoy some White Sox baseball coming up here in a little bit. We've got playoff bound White Sox baseball here on 720 WGN. Coming up after the next half hour, Matt Bubala here for Dean. We got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next here on 720 WGN.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
If you could change one thing about the Constitution, what would it be and why?
I would add an Equal Rights Amendment to the Constitution.
What gives you the most hope for the future?
My granddaughters. I'm very proud of my eldest granddaughter, who is a lawyer. She and other young people like her, I think, will help us get back on track.
Okay.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away this week on one of the holiest Jewish days of the year, is the start of Rosh Hashanah and the Jewish New Year. And we're remembering here for her here for just a couple of minutes. I know you've seen so much and heard so much. We'll, of course, this coming week, we'll get into all the political stuff that's going to happen out of this with a new nomination. But I was looking back over her life, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg was an amazing human being, not just a woman, but an amazing human being. And she really changed a lot for a lot of people. She wrote a piece for the New York Times back in 2016 on her advice for living. Don't forget, she just passed away at the age of 87. She was arguing in front of the Supreme Court with her fellow justices just in the last few months at the age of 87. And as I'm, you know, going to be 50 in another year, and then we start thinking about as we get to later in life, how important it is that we don't diminish our role in society and what we can give, and not just think that the best years of our lives are behind us or that we don't have things to offer. I know it gets tough as we get older and our kids grow older and grandkids come along and the youth starts to take over, but don't ever diminish your ability to change the world and to change things in your own life as your years go on. I hope you all can remember that and keep that in your heart. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is certainly somebody we can hold up as somebody who kept growing and fighting and evolving throughout her life. In this piece in the New York Times, I just want to read you a couple of sections of what she wrote about and said about her life. She says, "To today's youth, judgeship as an aspiration for a girl is not at all outlandish. Contrast the ancient days, the fall of 1956 when I entered law school. Women accounted for less than 3% of the legal profession in the U.S., and only one woman had ever served on a federal appellate court. Today, about half the nation's law students and more than one-third of our federal judges are women, including 3 of the justices seated on the U.S. Supreme Court bench. Women hold more than 30% of law school deanships in the U.S. and serve as general counsel to 24% of Fortune 500 companies. In my long life, I have seen great changes." Later, she writes, "What enabled me to take part in the effort to free our daughters and sons to achieve whatever their talents equipped them to accomplish, with no artificial barriers blocking their way? First, a mother who, by her example, made reading a delight and counseled me to constantly be independent, able to fend for myself whatever fortune might have in store for me. Second, teachers who influenced or encouraged me in my growing up years. At Cornell University, my professor of European literature, Vladimir Nabokov, changed the way I read and the way I write. Words could paint pictures, I learned from him. Choosing the right word and the right word order, he illustrated, could make an enormous difference in conveying an image or an idea. At Columbia Law School, my professor of constitutional law and federal courts, Gerald Gunther, was determined to place me in a federal court clerkship, despite what was then viewed as a grave impediment. On graduation, I was the mother of a 4-year-old child. After heroic efforts, Professor Gunther succeeded in that mission. Another often asked question when I speak in public, do you have some good advice you might share with us? Yes, I do. It comes from my savvy mother-in-law, advice she gave me on my wedding day. In every good marriage, she counseled, it helps sometimes to be a little deaf. I have followed that advice assiduously, and not only at home through 56 years of a marital partnership nonpareil, I have employed it as well in every workplace, including the Supreme Court. When a thoughtless or unkind word is spoken, best tune out. Reacting in anger or annoyance will not advance one's ability to persuade. Advice from my father-in-law has also served me well. He gave it during my gap years, 1954 to 56, when my husband Marty was fulfilling his obligation to the Army as an artillery officer at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. By the end of 1954, my pregnancy was confirmed. We looked forward to becoming 3 in July 1955. But I worried about starting law school the next year with an infant to care for. Father's advice, Ruth, if you don't want to start law school, you have a good reason to resist the undertaking. No one will think less of you if you make that choice. But if you really want to study law, you will stop worrying and find a way to manage child and school. Later, she writes, I have several times said that the office I hold now for more than 23 years is the best and most consuming job a lawyer anywhere could have. The court's main trust is to repair fractures in federal law. Because the courts grant review predominantly when other jurists have divided on the meaning of a statutory or constitutional prescription, the questions we take up are rarely easy. They seldom have indubitably right answers. Yet by reasoning together at our conferences and with more depth and precision through circulation of and responses to draft opinions, we ultimately agree far more often than we divide sharply. When a justice is of the firm view that the majority got it wrong, she is free to say so in dissent. I take advantage of that prerogative when I think it is important, as do my colleagues. Despite our strong disagreements on cardinal issues, think, for example, of controls on political campaign spending, affirmative action, access to abortion, we genuinely respect one another, even enjoy one another's company. Collegiality is crucial to the success of our mission. We could not do the job the Constitution assigns us to if we didn't. To use one of Justice Antonin Scalia's favorite expressions, get over it. Earlier, I spoke of great changes I have seen in women's occupations. Yet one must acknowledge the still bleak part of the picture. Most people in poverty in the United States and the world over are women and children. Women's earnings here and abroad trail the earnings of men with comparable education and experience. Our workplaces do not adequately accommodate the demands of childbearing and child rearing, and we have yet to devise effective ways to ward off sexual harassment at work and domestic violence in our homes. I am optimistic, however, that movement toward enlistment of the talent of all who compose We the People will continue. Those are words from Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg in a piece she wrote for the New York Times back in 2016. A couple of clerks from Ruth Bader Ginsburg's past wrote an article in the New York Times that they printed recently. This is Abby Gluck and Gillian Metzger. They served with her in the 1997 and 2003 terms. They wrote about her and her ability to speak up. Justice Ginsburg was the last justice on the court to have spent time before the bench as a legal advocate for equality. Justice Thurgood Marshall was the last before her. Today we take for granted her vision of gender equality, but we should never forget that it was not until 1971 that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled for the first time that the Constitution prohibits discrimination based on sex. That happened the year I was born. The country was almost 200 years old. That was Justice Ginsburg's case, Reed versus Reed, which challenged the rule that men were the preferred administrators of estates of deceased persons and that it gave a grieving mother the right to administer the estate of the son she lost. For Justice Ginsburg, equality did not mean special, she would say pedestal, treatment for women. Equality meant the same treatment for men and women. Stories from her childhood, as when she complained it was unfair that boys had woodshop while girls had sewing, are renowned. As an advocate, her litigation strategy zeroed in on that radical vision and realized it for all of us. Remembering Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Happy anniversary to I Dream of Jeannie. I Dream of Jeannie came out 55 years ago, which is hard to believe, but it's the 55th anniversary of I Dream of Jeannie. You know, you can still catch I Dream of Jeannie weekdays at noon and 12:30 on Antenna TV. Check your local listings. Antenna.tv is the website. But I was just reading an article about the anniversary and referring to a book that was written about the show. And we're talking about women's rights and the ways things have come along in Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's years. And I Dream of Jeannie, while you would think, well, that seems weird because, you know, she's all dressed up like this. She's calling him master. They actually did deal with some interesting episodes where she would, you know, change and like not call him master and would make him cook and make him clean and do things. And it started dealing, you know, at a much different time in our country with the women's movement and how women were starting to say, hey, this is not all that is going to be in my life. So I Dream of Jeannie, 55 years old. And Mary Tyler Moore, that show is 50 years old. Can you believe that? The Mary Tyler Moore Show, celebrating 50 years, debuted 50 years ago on CBS. And that show's impact. Talk about two different things. We talk about I Dream of Jeannie and the impact of that show and where that is in the, you know, when you think about women and the strides that have been able to be made over the last 50, 60 years. And then Mary Tyler Moore, about a single divorced woman living on her own and dealing with love and workplace issues forever. And what a magnificent show that still is today. It's amazing to think about the quality of that program and where that stands. Again, Matt Bubala here for Dean Richards, just for a couple more minutes until we get to White Sox pregame. Dean lost his mom this past week, so he's off. He will be back next weekend, and I'm sure we'll share more thoughts on his mom, who was just a wonderful, wonderful woman and kind of a star in her own right on the WGN-TV Morning News and here on the radio show. We played a little piece a little earlier in the show about when she visited Dean at one of the remotes, and she had great stories about Dean, and she brought Greek yogurt to an event once, so Dean's taking the weekend off, but he'll be back next week, and we look forward to hearing his reminiscences on his mom. Dr. Kevin Most was on with us earlier, and he mentioned that the ALS Walk for Life is next weekend. It's something that's near and dear to Dr. Most's heart, and I wanted to give that one more plug. It's a virtual walk this year, of course, in this new world that we're living in and trying to figure out where we're all headed and what's going to be happening. A lot of these things, we mentioned the Alzheimer's Walk, of course, that's going to be virtual. The ALS Walk for Life is next weekend. It's going to be virtual, but we'd love for you to visit the website, and if you can donate a dollar or two, we would love it. LesTurnerALS.org. LesTurnerALS.org. We also had on money management from Paul Nolte earlier from Kingsview Wealth Management. Paul is somebody you've heard probably a few times on the noon Wintrust Business Lunch. And Paul had some advice on savings and things you should be thinking about as we head into some uncertain times with the economy. You could reach Paul. I mentioned I'd give this out again. You can email Paul at Paul Nolte. So P-N-O-L-T-E, just the letter P-N-O-L-T-E at kingsview.com. P-Nolte at kingsview.com. Or you can call him 312-237-3813, 312-237-3813. I was mentioning earlier that it's Rosh Hashanah and it's the Jewish New Year, so Happy New Year to everybody. Lashana Tova, as I've learned, to all of our friends out there. And I was watching with the kids last night a comedy special. There's a guy named John Mulaney, who's a really fun and relatively clean comedian. When you're looking for something to watch with the kids, it's very difficult these days. You go through, you know, Bill Burr or Dave Chappelle, and you start watching that with some teenagers, and you start going, oh my gosh, what am I doing? But John Mulaney, you can watch this with, you know, teens and feel okay about a couple of words here and there, but not insanely graphic descriptions of things that you will be embarrassed about for the rest of your life. And this was a special he did a few years ago at the Chicago Theater. and he starts telling a story about being an altar boy and being in the church, and goes through some things about how they changed the sign of peace. We used to say "and with you," and now it's "and with your spirit." And that really screwed him up, because he was pretending for his parents that he still went to church. And of course, he didn't anymore. And then he's there and he gets caught up by this. And he said, why is the church doing this to me? And then after he tells the whole story, he apologizes to everybody else. He says, "I'm so sorry for not including you, but we've been doing that for about 2,000 years. And it made me laugh out loud, of course, as a Catholic. But to think about with this Jewish New Year, and here I am about 50 years old and just learning from friends and people that I know about other traditions. And we've had such a lifetime, most of us, of being in our little enclaves of whatever religion we grew up with and whatever our beliefs are. And if we could all do a little bit more, probably just a little bit more, to accept and understand and know everybody else's role in the world and everybody else's beliefs, I think we would be in a much, much better place."
I think you're right. Although I have to tell you, I can agree with that changing of the words, because I started going to Catholic school in sixth grade.
Okay.
And then so I started going to church regularly.
Right.
And then it seemed like a year or 2 years later, just after I'd learned this, got comfortable with it, they switched up all of the words on me. And I show up one day and everything's different. I'm like, "You got to be kidding me." So I relearned it within a year of having to learn it.
I guess that's how they keep you coming back.
Yeah. Like,
you know, things are
going to
freshen it up a little bit. We got something new in the gospel. You're going to love this. Come on back, everybody. Yeah. You know, they decide things over years with the prayers, and, you know, we don't. The word "wretch" and "saving grace" is gone. I mean, there's things over the years that we just decide to change up. And I don't think the funny thing was, Mulaney went on with, you know, he said, so what happens here that we're changing "and be, you know, and with you" to "and with your spirit"? Are they, you know, they're all in Rome, they're gathered together. What are the major problems that we can solve? Number one, nope, not going to touch that one. And then they get down to this. And so we just throw it to that. It's a very funny special. It's on Netflix. John Mulaney, the comeback kid, filmed at the Chicago Theater a few years ago. All right, everybody, it's time. We've got playoff bound White Sox baseball coming up here in just a few seconds. And then stay with us all day long, because after that, we've got more sports and Hamp, OB, and Kaz with Mark Carmen for some Bears post game. Enjoy the afternoon, everybody. Dean Richards back next Sunday morning at 9 a.m. I'm Matt Bubala. Thanks so much for being with us.